Today, we have a truly inspiring guest joining us, Natasha Omokodion-Kalulu. Natasha is an accomplished writer whose rich cultural heritage spans Nigeria, Jamaica, Zambia, as well as the UK. Her unique cultural background deeply informs her storytelling and allows her to weave complex narratives that resonate with readers throughout the country and across the globe. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Written by You, the Literacy Podcast. I'm your host, Chelsea Chomba, and today's conversation explores several fascinating themes, including how a diverse upbringing such as Natasha's can richly impact one's writing, how becoming a writer is more of a long-term journey that first begins in your mind, and how the pace of your writing and the process that it takes can really affect the result of your work. Natasha dives into her own writing approaches, how she is able to channel real-life emotions into her characters, and how she advocates for allowing stories to develop organically over time and encourage writers as well as aspiring readers to embrace the revision process as a crucial part of crafting impactful work. Throughout our discussion, Natasha offers great insights and reassurance to those who may feel it's too late to pursue their writing and reading dreams. She passionately believes that anybody can tell the story and benefit from the stories of others. I'm very excited to share this conversation with you. So without further ado, let's jump into this inciting conversation with Natasha Omokodion-Kalulu. So, I'm looking at Natasha right now, and she's wearing the most beautiful chitenge as usual. Before we start, I need you to tell me about these chitenge dresses, these chitenge attires. What's the story behind them?
I have a story behind them, but I will say, I come from a family where it was very important, I think, generations ago to carve one identity using what we wear and using chitenge cloth, even when Western cloth was, you know, asked to be uniform, asked to be the norm. So it's something I think that's been passed down. And quite generally, I feel like a visceral sense of empowerment when I'm just chitenge. Even though, I mean, I like all kinds of clothes from everywhere, but I do have a particular fondness, and I feel a genuine connection, especially some of the symbols that you see, the writing, the colors. I mean, there's a certain energy that we get from it. So I just enjoy.
To be honest, I honestly think they're beautiful. I've met you in person and I'm seeing you now, and I don't think, have I ever seen a photo of you without chitenge? I think you're mostly in some beautiful chitenge. So I just wanted to appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you.
Speaking about heritage and culture and all that, I see here that you have very rich roots. You have roots in Nigeria, Jamaica, Zambia, as well as the UK. And of course, we know that you are a writer. I mean, unless somebody's living under a rock, especially if they're in Zambia, they know you. So this rich heritage of yours, do you think it shapes how you write? Do you think it has influence on your writing?
I do. I certainly do. And just to give an example, so yes, I may have roots in those places, but I'm firmly rooted and raised in Zambia. Mm. And my mother is Zambian. So I think even Nobi from here was very influenced by being from different places, and just the title itself, when it says Nobi from here, I think translates to foreigner. And it does influence the themes, I think, that I tackle, especially around identity, returning to sort of like home, right? The concept of home. So yeah, I think when you're from multiple places, there's some places that you can't be all of from, but you are still connected very deeply. So it certainly reflects in through various themes throughout my work, I think. Yeah.
And I think it definitely bleeds through your writing and enriches it. I've read Nobi from here, and like you said, you can definitely feel just how much depth that wide cultural spectrum that you have really adds to your writing. But did you always think you were going to be a writer, though? Were you maybe once supposed to be an engineer and somehow ended up being a writer?
So I didn't think I would be a writer. It wasn't really an option. I think when I was growing up, it wasn't an option for a profession. But I was an avid reader from as young as I can remember. They'd have to get me out of a book before bedtime. I always had a novel with me by the time I was 8 or 9, I think. And going into secondary school, I think I was fortunate enough that I took literature from the time I was 12 years old onwards. And I was such I loved history. I was such a history buff. So no, I didn't know I'd become a writer, but later those attributes became what I guess was foundation to become a writer. So yeah, I always wrote. I just didn't know I'd become a writer.
You know, I think this is a recurring theme that I'm experiencing with the people that I'm interviewing for this podcast, that they have some form of either reading or writing from their childhood. And I think there are people that are listening to this that will think, oh, maybe that's no consolation to them. Maybe if they're already adults and they don't have that background of being writers or avid readers from the time they were 0 years old, like you. Do you think that matters, though? Do you think it's important for someone to come from a background where they have an interest in either writing or reading for them to eventually emerge and become a successful writer? Do you think that matters?
I think it raises the chances, certainly. But what it does, the thing about literature, it's tradition, right? So every book has come out of many books before it. And story in itself, or I guess in the Western sense, does have a tradition of canon. So the more you're in it, the more you absorb it, and the more it becomes instinctive what story should be, right? But having said that, and that's why I've said in the Western tradition, we've also had our tradition. And just because someone is not writing physically doesn't mean that they don't have the inherent ability to tell story. So there's one thing being able to write it in what is the Western standard for sort of your line level, beautiful words and how those patterns are put on a page versus maybe how it's lyrically done and stored and told in different through sound or through rhythm or through drama. So I don't think you need to have physically been a reader writer in order to be a great storyteller. It really is down to story. And without story, I mean, you can write the most magnificent sentences, but without the ability to tell story or without the ability to develop that muscle of story, I think then you may not actualize full potential. But yeah, I believe in story in every kind of form and shape. So I hope that has answered your question.
It has quite beautifully. I like the point of every book has emerged from every book before it. Is that what you said? I think that's beautiful. And everything that you've said in answering my question, I think can provide a lot of consolation to people. There are people who feel like maybe because they're in their 30s or their 40s, it's too late for them to hone a writing skill, to learn how to write or to tell a story. But you're saying that, of course, just because someone isn't a writer doesn't mean they can't tell a story. And I think I agree with you. I think I do. But circumstances that surround us obviously contribute. Like who we are today and the stage of life that we're at now can certainly contribute, right? And I remember in our conversation when we met for what was a lovely coffee date, by the way. When we met, you mentioned something that I think I found very interesting, and I meant to talk about it, where you said that there were certain things that really contributed to even if the stars should fall. There were just certain things happening in the world, certain things happening in your life that contributed to the style that you wrote that book in, the pacing, and the eventual outcome of the book. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So like I'm saying, I think story, first of all, and just to wrap up what you asked me before, yes, I think anyone should be able to tell a story whenever they're ready, no matter what season in their life they're in. And if they're not able to, as I said, physically do it, even if they partner with someone, if there's a story to be told, it's never too late for anyone to be able to tell that story, whatever way we get it out into the world. With regards to the external environment when creating a body of work, particularly prior to me writing it, I had already indulged in the archives and history, right, behind this piece. So I was already psychologically still stuck in that era. I knew I needed to do more in it to immerse myself more. But in order to write fear, true, genuine life, you know, dilemmas, which where the stakes are high, where it's either life or death, where love is life or death, where ideas are life or death, where your political views could be world-changing. And even from a very micro place, like a house in those days, African township, where your ideas and what you believe in influence is always influenced by world events. To be able to take the material I had and lift it to that visceral level, to the point where you can understand it from Luca or Andy's perspective, those are the characters of the book. I was fueled by what was going on around. And that was the beginning of 2020. So I think it started with internally in the country. We had riots taking place. We had gassings happening. Even at schools, there was just death suddenly. There was a COVID virus came for the first time. It was a first. So it was a time of first. It was a time of anxiety. Around the world, we started to see Black Lives Matter. We saw George Floyd in publishing. You saw Black writers all over the world fighting for their rights, their publishing rights to be equal. And all kind of, it really was a year that shook us up. And so I think amid all of that, that gave me the anxiety that I felt. And even for the first time, we had to contemplate life and death amongst each other. It allowed, I think, for the story now to take on a real sense of fear, sense of what it means to love in times that are dangerous, you know. And I don't know if I would have been able to produce it in normal times without having had that experience by then. So yeah, it was a tough time.
I actually like your answer because it brings out the point that there certainly has to be a certain input that you experience as a writer. Of course, we're always advocating that writers or aspiring writers should read a lot if they're going to produce quality stories, like you said, where you can really feel fear or you can really feel like how the character becomes real to you and becomes a person that you know and you've met and you understand their thoughts and their feelings. Of course, reading other people's work gives you some insight as to how that is executed. But then again, like you said, there's a lot of emotional input that can come from our surrounding that can really enrich our work. And that actually brings me to the point of pacing one's writing. Like, how long reasonably... Let's actually start from here. How long did it take you to write the book? Because we see people publishing books locally here in Zambia. People can publish 3-4 books in a year. Granted, most of the time, they tend to be nonfiction. They tend to be motivational or financial. But you already said it, that even when writing Stars Should Fall, you did do some research. You put some research into it to enrich the story, to obviously make it factual to some extent, even though it was fiction. So how long did it take you to write the book? And how long do you think it should reasonably take somebody to write a body of work?
That's a very loaded question. So allow me to just process that. And also coming from the last question. So first of all, I think every project, every book will have its own requirements. It will have its own unique set of requirements, how much emotion it demands from you versus how much it doesn't, how much technical research it demands from you versus how much it doesn't. So even with one author, you can have one author who write something in a year and one who take 10 years. You have some authors who write, you know, it really depends. One on the author and two on the project, on the book itself. So I wouldn't give it a prescribed time. But I would say that, to give an example, my first book took a year and a half in total. I think by the time it went into, from when I started into publishing. But again, when we say when you started, but that means physically starting to type. You know, prior to that, you're already thinking about it. Usually you're already thinking, you're already processing, you're already planning. So I don't know if you can really take into account how long that part takes, because I believe it's still writing, even though you haven't physically written that chapter yet. But in relation to what you're asking now and the question that you had before, also depends on the author's aim and intention, I think, in the work that they are trying to do. And I think for me, one of my first priorities is to ensure that there's emotional truth in the story. So like you said, whether these people lived in the 50s and I've only been here now, an author's attempt, I think, to transmute maybe what they experience emotionally through their characters, that sometimes takes time. You may genuinely want to write a character who's going through something and try all you want. And you find that maybe a year later, you've actually gone through it yourself. And maybe when you come back to that page, so you could have written it as technically beautiful as possible, but maybe not emotionally. So how long a project takes depends on how much that is important to the author as well. Will you give it time? Will you let it bake? Will you maybe go through some things in life which make you come back to it? So I think one of the magical things about creating the novel is that if you've got your draft, you're always able to come back to it. You're always able to revise it. You're always able to maybe notice something else, maybe not even just emotive, but physical observations, or maybe your technique. You just click, oh my God, if I try changing my sentences this way, you've got time to revise. I mean, I think a lot of the work is in the revision of it. So I wouldn't comment so much on how long it takes others, but I would say that it's a privilege to know that if you can take your time, you can really, I think, build something that by the time you say you're done, you know in your heart and your brain and your ethos and your emotions that it's done. So yeah, that's really subjective. But I'd say give it a year, even for a short story. Like, give it a year. Play around, love it a bit more, break it up, put it back together. And I think you start to find your voice or find techniques that you didn't know existed when you play on one particular piece of work or a few of them without the rush to put them out early. Sometimes they take their time. And then some are just quick. Some are just, they come ready. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I would agree with you. I think for someone to write something that is of great impact to others, to build, I mean, let's think about how long it takes for maybe a child to build an entire personality. Because children are born with, the only ability they are born with is the ability to emulate what they see around them, what they hear, you know. Let's think of how long it takes to build character in that sense. But then you are now creating someone from scratch. Maybe someone who's fiction, of course, someone who's not real, but for you to give them a unique identity that people can feel, and another person in the story that they have a relationship with, and then also be able to write in a way where people can feel, like you said, the fear, the love, it should obviously take at least a year. But whatever the case, like you said, I like how you're balanced. You gave a very balanced answer to say books are different, authors are different. There are people who, like you said, will be processing something for a long time and then at one go, perhaps just be able to dump it. And there's so many different styles and approaches to writing. In the end, the result is what matters the most.
Yeah.
Speaking of processes, how do you fit the writing into your life? I think that's the other challenge that people have. Some people take longer to write a book than they ever wanted to, perhaps. Not because the ideas are not there, but because they're busy. They have kids, they have jobs, they have careers that they're building, perhaps outside of writing. So how do you squeeze it in? How do you make sure that it has its place?
Please, it's in.
Yeah, squeezing it in.
I wish I could squeeze it in. For my first book, I wrote while I was working, which, yeah, you literally give up your... And I think I was lucky enough that I had a mentor who told me, you're going to have to give something up if you're going to be able to complete a novel. And I think that was some of the best advice I ever got. And so I think for that year and a half, I didn't really have a weekend. If I had one, my family was extremely excited. But you've got to choose what's going to go. And for me, it was the weekends. I used them, I scheduled my routine around them, and I just made sure that I was going to get the book finished while I was in a full-time job. But for the second one, like I said, that was during the pandemic. So we were able to slow down and work from home. And I built a routine around it. I think maybe having come from formal work, I was able to just translate what my routine would have been in the office to the project. So every morning I was at the desk until quite late, depending on where I was, what stage I was in the book. However, every now and then there's a time where you have to, okay, for me, where I have to distance myself from the work, maybe take a break, especially a four-year project. There's time to go to peel yourself away, try and do other things for a bit, and then come back to the page because you're too attached. And sometimes it's difficult to see where things aren't working or where things could be better. And as you said, if you're going to build characters who really, truly become people, who I call them people, not characters, who will last forever, that takes some time. It takes meeting them at the page a lot of times, drafting with them a lot of times, them sometimes telling you, I wouldn't do that in that scene. That's not me. And you having to rewrite an entire scene or chapter because it's not ringing true to the character that you've made. So, yeah, it's process.
Okay, no, that's a good answer. I think the point that I would like, one of the things that I would hope that maybe aspiring writers or writers should take out of this conversation is it takes a lot of deliberate time and work. I think the perception that I've gotten from some of the writers I've interacted with is that your talent will do the work for you. You will just spontaneously combust and be able to produce groundbreaking work. But even for people that are genuinely talented, it takes a lot of deliberate time. You deliberately set time aside. You deliberately had a schedule. Like you said, you forego certain things, you sacrifice certain things. And also, I'm sure you consulted, right? Because you said you had a mentor.
I can't even finish that answer without saying community is maybe, I don't know, 80% of it. I think it's really important to belong to writing communities, reading communities, have people in your corner who are able to read your work and give you real feedback. Like my mom, she would just tell me straight up. She's just like, what's this you read? There's no way this would have happened in this year, or they wouldn't have had, I don't know, this kind of shoe or whatever it is. So I think having a community who you can share the work with and get genuine feedback from is key. I really don't think, I never say I wrote myself. Having people who can read from a cultural perspective, you know, an is a perspective. I think we had this discussion the other day. There's so many things that people can end up finding offensive that you may at the time may be blind to, and you just sort of like just telling a story. But I think all those readers and feedback, you have agents, you have editors, you have just friends, you know, writing community, writing groups, wherever you can get that kind of feedback. That is also very much part of the process. My process. But I would encourage, because you will be read ultimately. So I think it's helpful to get the early comments early on. And then it also allows you then to be sure of certain decisions that you've made. Some you'll say, oh, really? Maybe you get it a few times, but you may know your formal reason for applying that technique or, you know, whatever, maybe an event. So I think having readers along the way is really important. Not all of the way, but at stages that you feel, okay, I think I'm ready to share. It's really helpful.
Yeah, I think I like that. I like how, in essence, it's like you have to fail quickly. Like you write the first draft and you fail at it, and then you get the feedback and you quickly get over it and go to the next level. so that by the time it's hitting the bookshelf or it's, you know, hitting someone's table, it's the most revised, most refined version of whatever section of that scene is. And I think that's what we should all be aiming for. Like you said earlier, the revision process is a lot of the time. You may even write maybe your book in 6 months, but the revision, the going back and editing and re-editing is what takes time. So I think that's an important point. How do you pick the titles for your books? Especially the first one, No Beef From Here. I remember the first time I saw it, I doubted myself. Like, how am I supposed to pronounce this? It's No Beef From Here, but it's H-I-A. So what's the story behind
that? Yeah. Behind that, I'll tell you, I don't know if I've ever told anyone this, actually. So I'll tell you just from youth. I'm actually trying to remember. It's usually a lot of things. But yeah, I wrote maybe 90% of that book with a really, like a placeholder title. It didn't have a title per se. Usually you start with a very Manila, right? Like some kind of Manila like thing that just holds it. But I think by the time I'm getting towards the end, I said, and now I can't even remember if it happened in real life or I asked someone. I had been in Lagos the year before because my grandparents were ailing and I wanted to spend time with them before they left us. And so in doing so, I had gone on a Damfo, which is like a minibus. And just for the experience, I wanted to go, just go, was really fun. And I remember like the lady I had gone with, she kept saying, don't say that or don't do that. Like they'll know you're not from here. But they knew I wasn't from here. Like she kept saying, it may be from me. And I was like, the beach. But then I'd forgotten about it. And towards the end of the book, which is years later, when I had written it, in my sharing, again, part of the process, some of my scenes with, I think I needed someone to help me with the pidgin English in that book. So he's the one who probably broke down for me that, oh, no, be from here means foreigner. Like it means, you know, this one doesn't live here or doesn't come from here. And it, yeah, tied up everything. It's just tied up all of the work. So instantly I knew, like, you know what? Let me give it a try. It's foreign on the tongue, which is, I guess, the whole point of the whole book, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, and it also means what it says it means. And it just summarized everything. So that's how No Beef From Here became No Beef From Here. For Stars Should Fall, I always say I don't take the credit for that. In the research that I was doing, I found that because it's a book based in Northern Rhodesia, the movie transitioning into Zambia, what we experience in Zambia. In the process of the freedom fighters' struggles, I think they were separated. They were held in detention, but separated geographically. So you'd find that they'd hold one in Western Province, one in Kabwe, one in Northern Province, etc. What is now the names of those provinces I've just said, so that they wouldn't be able to be together and keep the movement going. So when they would write to each other, they would sign off. And I found this in one of KK's biographies, not an autobiography, but a biography. And they would sign off saying, onwards ever, backwards never, even if the stars should fall. That's how they would sign off. And I found it so moving and powerful. And it was such a statement of loyalty, of forward movement, of commitment, maybe even to an extent that I haven't seen really in my time.
And I've noticed that the book is much bigger than the first one, actually. The book, it's much bigger. It's double the size. Even if the stars should fall, it's double the size of the first book.
Yes, it is. Mm. But it took me 3 times as long. But also, if you're going to research our history, it's so wide and complex and huge. Most of the 90% of the job was what to not write. What to keep out, because, it's sprawling. So, yes, and it deserved a lot more space. I think I've had some criticism that it could have been shorter. But I think it's also I think I was intentional in my choice to let it breathe out. Because, as I'm saying, it was a lot. So, yes, it's much bigger than No Beef From Here.
Oh, I'm sure your readers are not complaining. I'm pretty sure they're not complaining. All right. So looking at like the local landscape, what would be your honest opinion of the storytelling locally here in Zambia? Do you think there's hope for it? Do you think there's room for improvement? If so, what? I'm saying this because I'm leading to, please correct my pronunciation, Copa Monstera. Right?
Copa Monstera.
Copa Monstera, mm-hmm. Yes. So tell us a little bit about Copa Monstera.
So first of all, you know what? I think we are really trying. And where we're coming from and where we are now, we've made a lot of progress. However, every day is progress. And I really think that 5 years from now, we will be way more ahead than we are now. Even just the difference between, I think, 7 years ago, first starting on the scene, there really wasn't much. But even from a macro perspective, we now have our national arts policy. We now have a lot more writing groups. I think it was almost nothing. I think there was one writing group when I started, and maybe we had Zawa. I hope I'm not omitting anyone else. But I think my point is we've got a lot more going for us now than we did 6-7 years ago. And I do think that through that, exponentially, we'll be able to grow. And the more people that we have, I think it also now, there was a time maybe, I don't know, it was sort of like, I don't know why, the misconception that no, there's no market, people don't read, it's not worth writing, you'll just be. I really don't see that. I've never seen it like that. And for now I see, okay, it actually works. There is a market. Not now I see, but rather I've experienced that it's possible. So I will say we are in just the right position to leapfrog into a time that we now start to truly see multiple titles coming out, really that we enjoy, that we remember for a long time, that we exchange, that we discuss. And I'm super excited about that. So on the back of that, Copa Monstera is a publishing brand that I started just before I wrote Nobi From Here, because I wanted to be able to publish and I wanted to understand that market. But the only way I could do it was through publishing the works that I had. So now having done two and gone through the process, gone through the school fees, I think, of it, the education of it, I think now we're ready to publish other voices. So yes, we're looking forward, for instance, to an anthology that we made a public call for. Yeah. Uh-huh. We've got 12 really great writers. I mean, they had some really great stories. The theme was women and money, and I can't wait for it to be shared. But in the process, as I'm saying, the structures, or ecosystem that I'm saying I felt lacked when I first started, I think is what we're trying to bring to the fore now. So yes, we have great stories, but how do we ensure that we've got a sustainable group of group of authors coming up, who gone through the workshops, gone through the revisions, all the things we've been talking about, that we enrich each other, that we build community amongst each other, that we get published, that we get put on the stage, that we get to practice, be on panels, exchange our ideas with clarity and so on. Because once you've written, it's not just the writing. You've got to be able to represent your work, represent your country, represent your family, where you come from. There's so many dynamics that I think even for me, I didn't know that I was going to come into, that I'm hoping that with the writers that come through Copa Monstera, we'll be able to go through all those things so that they feel equipped and within the ecosystem and so on and so forth. And of course, it's not just Copa Monstera, or not just me, there's a lot of initiatives going on and we expect a lot more. So like I'm saying, I think we're at a good time and I think we should really leverage it.
Okay. I think that response is very liberating and also just a side note, Copa Monstera is going to be publishing on merit, is what you're saying. Not publishing just the authors. Like, I'm going to bring my manuscript. I'm writing
merit. Yes, ma'am. Because ultimately, Chelsea, it's a business. And yeah. Like, it's an art we really love. It's a business. Mm-hmm. And I personally think there's nothing that settles your book. One, in the long run, because I don't look at a sprint. You could do all the marketing, you could apply all the tactics you want and sell out 1 million copies in a year or in a month, whatever. That's just an arbitrary number. But ultimately, you want to create work that lasts, that truly, you know, for years and years and years, from a business perspective, it's just on repeat order. Or it's translated into other forms and shapes, into audios and dramas and, you know, TV. So it's about the work. I think the work is the biggest marketing tool you have. And I think that only comes again with intentionality and truly resonating with your audience. So if we can meet that criteria, then I think we'll have quite a few voices coming, because I know and I've seen we've really got a lot of talent in this country.
Okay, great. I'm going to be doing my writing push-ups and press-ups, making sure that by the time my work is coming to Copper Monstera, it's the best version of all of me could have ever been. So, okay, that's great.
Doesn't become the best by yourself.
Yes, I mean, of course.
Of course. You still have editors, you have people, you have support. So, you know, books are not made alone, usually.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be reassuring.
Okay, so to be honest, this conversation has been a mini masterclass, a mini one. Is there any hope for entire masterclasses to come with Copper Monstera in the future?
Absolutely. We began in 2023. Admittedly, we didn't have any in 2024, but in 2025, we'll be having them, of course, with our anthology cohort, who I mentioned. And I'm sure we'll be announcing the public ones in this year. But that's the whole basis of Copper Monstera. So yes, we are here to also be the support that other writers and editors and readers were to us, and we'll be that to other writers.
Okay, great. I really, really hope to be a part of it. It sounds like something that's very exciting. So all the listeners, please look out for Copper Monstera. You can follow them on Instagram. Is there a Facebook page?
We're on Instagram, not Facebook yet, but Instagram primarily. On Facebook, you can follow my author page or my personal page, whatever announcements come. A couple months they are there on mine, but we'll be sure to Facebook page this. Yes, sir. Thanks for reminding us.
All right. And then for your books, for both Stars Should Fall and Not Be From Here, Book World, is it?
Yes. So Book World, Lusaka Collective at Agora and Lusaka International Airport, 37D Art Gallery on Middleway. And then if you are abroad, we're on Amazon. Just Google Not Be From Here. Even if the Stars Should Fall is not online, it's limited to Zambia right now. And what else? And Not Be From Here is coming out in the States under Simon & Schuster. First announcement, Chelsea. So your podcast gets to do this first. It'll be coming out in the States this July, 2025. So really excited about that as well.
Great. Exciting. So as we wrap up, I'm trying to build a culture where the guests recommend Maybe to one or two of their best writing advice, and then also one or two of their favorite books that they think would really be beneficial for people to read, to encourage them to read, regardless of whether or not they want to be writers, just to improve their literacy level, to teach them something, anything.
Okay, that's a bit difficult. I can't do two. There's too many purples flying in my head. But two pieces of advice. First one is to really just get started and truly believe in yourself. I do believe when a story is knocking, and anyone who really truly writes a story knows that feeling, when it's knocking and it wants to come out, don't fight it. No matter how basic or simple, even just like a hardcover book, a little exercise book, whatever it is to start. And also, like I said earlier, if it's on your mind and you keep thinking about it and you think, oh, then this will lead to that, you're already writing. It's just that you haven't yet begun physically. So don't ignore it. Lean into it. And sometimes I think what I love about writing is it's a way of you processing things psychologically, emotionally, logically, you know. So sometimes even you just need it, and it can be very cathartic. So let it happen if it wants to come. Mm-hmm. And just trust yourself. And about how successful, whatever, those things should be not something that is primary. If it comes later with time, it does. But if the story calls to you, I beg you, answer it and enjoy it and cry in it and laugh in it and do whatever it calls you to do. Second piece of advice I would say is, and we all had to learn, I had to learn, there's no one does it without learning. And even now, it even makes me excited to learn other things. I can't play the piano, but now I'd like to. At my age, I'll still do what, you know, little primary school kids do and try and learn something in a year. I found it the same with writing. And like you said earlier, like no matter what level you are, you can always start to learn. And in so saying that, there are plenty of resources online. If you can access them, please do. Quite a few are there for free. For me, when I first started looking, there was a site called reedsy.com. That's R-E-E-D-S-Y, which happens to be a marketplace for writing professionals. But if you're not looking for a writing professional and you just want some classes on things like dialogue and character and setting, they're all there for free and you can subscribe and they drop you. You can pick a course and every 2 days, I think it is, or every day, they give you something towards whatever topic it is that you've chosen. But having said that, the best way to apply any learning you're doing in writing is to be writing already. Mm-hmm. So like I said, if you're going to start, even no matter how it is, how basic or simple, or it's still foggy in your mind, if you've got it on the page and you do commit yourself to getting whatever resources are there, just do it and you will thank your future self, will thank yourself, your current self later. And it's such an enjoyable process. So I wish you all the best in your writing. And having said that, the books I'd recommend, there are so many. I'm even looking. What I'll do is I'll be true to my subconscious and pick out the books that is telling me immediately. So I think I'll say top three for me, and maybe it reflects in my work, but I don't know. And outside of this one, I'll say The Poisonwood Bible, Barbara Kingsolve. I loved Small Island by Andrea Levi.
It's such a beautiful cover.
I know. I'm a historical fiction lover, so I'm a bit biased.
You have a time.
I'm like, yeah. Like, I'm so excited because they just transport you. They take you to a time. They take you to individuals who, in our time, by the time we saw them, maybe they were elderly and you just said, oh, that's just a grandma. But I always am so moved by what was grandma's life when she was just a girl like me, right? Set in the Second World War. And Jamaican lady, she moved from Jamaica to the UK to follow a husband. And it's nothing like she had imagined it would be, and end up living with another lady, European lady, and all kinds of things happen.
That sounds like a great read.
It is. It really is. So Small Island, Andrea Levi.
Okay.
I Love I'm Going by Jan Gassi. This one, I remember having tried to start quite a few books, but this one from the first line, I was gone. I was like, before I knew that I was on page 30, I'm like, what? I loved it, loved it, loved it. So this is a story set in Ghana and in the United States during the slave trade time. Mm-hmm. So it's about those who get separated and it follows their generations all the way to the 2000s, I think, or maybe late 90s. But she manages to do all those, like 400 years and 400 pages, which I think is a miracle. I don't know how she did it, but you can take a lot of technique from structure and her characterization and slices of life. I thought print. And yes, like I said, from the beginning, How Favela Son always will be the... I think the book for me that I read when I was still in university, and we hadn't yet had, I don't think at that time, enough contemporary African novels where we could see ourselves and learn our history and learn prior experiences. And it just remains groundbreaking for me. It's set in the Biafra War in Nigeria in the 60s. So this was the Redo Mix, Olana and the rest of the crew. They're unforgettable characters. Even now, if one of them walked in, I'd know exactly where our conversation would take off from. And so those are my three pictures. Thank you.
I like how Half of a Yellow Sun, I think, is very well known. But I like how, especially the first one, I've never seen it. I've never heard of it. It's like a little treasure that I've discovered. So I'm excited for that one. So thank you so much, Natasha, for this. This has been incredible. I said mini masterclass. Anyone who's interested in the full masterclass should follow Copo Monstera as well as Natasha's handles on social media so that you can keep up with whatever is happening with Copo Monstera. Maybe if she's got a new project, you'll be the first to hear it. Yes. So any last words before we close?
No, just happy writing. Have a fantastic 2025. And Chelsea, we're so proud of you for starting this podcast. We need more well discussions around literature, around how we write, why we write. And I think it's an incredible way to start the year. So well done.
Thank you.
To you. And we look forward to more interactions. So thank you very much for your service.
Thank you. Thank you all so much for joining us for this exciting episode. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with the incredibly talented Natasha as much as I did. As we wrap up, I encourage you to please like and subscribe to whatever platform you're listening to or watching on, and share your perspectives in the comment section. Join us next week for another exciting conversation that will continue to inspire and ignite your passion for literacy. Thank you so much for joining us.